You're listening to Classic Dialogues, Land Power in the Indo-Pacific, a China Land Power Study Center production. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and are not necessarily those of the Department of the Army, the U.S. Army War College, or any other agency of the U.S. government. 5th Security Force Assistance Brigade Commander Colonel Brandon Teague is joining us today from Joint Base Lewis-McChord. Colonel Rich Butler, the China Land Power Study Center Director, is in the studio as well. Today's topic is the 5th SFAB and its role in the Pacific. Over to you, Colonel Butler.
Brandon, welcome to the show. If you don't mind, we'll go ahead and get started with some questions.
Yeah.
Given the importance of the Indo-Pacific region in the U.S. military strategy, how does the 5th SFAB contribute to U.S. Indo-Pacific Command's objectives, particularly in light of the challenges posed by the People's Republic of China?
We contribute in several different ways. We work directly for United States Army Pacific on a day-to-day basis, obviously through the Indo-Pacific Commander. Three things that General Flynn says that ends, ways, and means of how he's getting after an integrated deterrence and Admiral Aquilino, his guidance to him. And that is, the end is no war. We, the United States, and all of our allies and partners, no war in the Indo-Pacific. The ways we get after that are through three different things. Joint Pacific Multinational Readiness Center, three different CTC rotations a year. One is done in Alaska, one is done in Hawaii, and then one is exportable into the region. The last couple of years, we've done one in Australia, and we've done one in Indonesia. And then this year, we will do one in the Philippines. So JPMRC is one way. The second way is through Operation Pathways. And Operation Pathways, I know you're familiar with all of the exercises that go on out here in the Pacific, but it is a conglomeration of all those exercises together is Operation Pathways. So from Super Gritty Shield in Indonesia, Salakanib, Balikatan, all those joint and bilateral exercises that are executed, that is the other way. And we're involved in all three of these. And then the last way is building of joint interior lines. Out here in the Pacific, we are different than the European continent. They are mainly contiguous, and we've been there for a very long time. And there are interior lines that we can use for multitude of things, but logistics obviously is a big one. Out here in the Pacific, given the tyranny of distance that everything has to move, both people and equipment, we've never had those joint interior lines. So hoping to build those joint interior lines in the countries that we are in is the last way. And then the means, of course, is the dollars and the funding that it takes to execute all of those things is quite significant, because for the Army, logistics and movement of people and things via the big boats that has to get it to those locations is very expensive. So it takes a little more for us to get our stuff to and fro. So that's the big portion of how we are getting after Indo-Pacific Command's objectives.
No, that's fantastic. I look forward to hearing a little more in detail about how the 5th SFAB is contributing to that. Given that diverse geopolitical landscape you started describing for us in the Indo-Pacific, what specific challenges arise when engaging with countries that have different cultural, social, and economic structures?
Obviously, language is the first thing. We are not language trained necessarily. If by chance we have somebody that speaks one of those languages in one of the countries we're in, it's really due to our recruiting or just by chance that we have somebody. So we don't send our advisors to get specially trained in language like other elements of the U.S. Army do. So language is one. Good thing is that a lot of these countries, the officers specifically, do speak English, or at least a lot of them do speak English. Of course, we use interpreters just like we would and have in the past in other countries. So language is one thing, but it really comes down to interoperability. The three types of interoperability, be it human, technical, and procedural, that human interoperability portion of that is language. But then different ethnic backgrounds, religious diversity, all of those things we have to take into account. And we do in our train up before we employ advisors forward. But procedural and the technical interoperability are very different. And what we have to be very conscious of as the U.S. Army is not go into one of these countries thinking that we're going to turn one of their headquarters into something that the United States Army has. We go in and we assess first on what we think they need, obviously talking to the partner and asking them what they think they need. And then from there, we will take our training plan forward hand in hand with the partner.
Let me dive a little more into that persistent presence and the advisory roles you guys are famous for. How does 5th SFAB contribute to the concept of integrated deterrence in the Indo-Pacific region, especially considering the diverse geopolitical landscape?
So we are persistently in five countries, then based off a priority from the Indo-Pacific commander and, of course, General Flynn. Those five countries, Mongolia, Philippines, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Thailand. And so we do 6-month rotations. Had a force package turnover here on 1 April. So new 6 months for those advisors that are forward now. And then we episodically will go to any other country that comes up with something that General Flynn thinks is a priority for us. We will engage and or do that task with that country.
Can you provide insights into the most recent operations and activities that your team has been involved in the region? And what were some of the key accomplishments or even challenges that you encountered?
I'll just kind of start in the north with Mongolia, just because it's a great win news story. Their big ask in Mongolia was, hey, we want to develop our non-commissioned officer corps the way that the Army in the United States has. They had no basis for that. So we went up there and we stood up a non-commissioned officer academy in Mongolia. Initially, we were the trainers for that. And now we're doing train the trainer, and we're handing that NCO development over to the Mongolians that they're going to be able to run themselves. So that's one. A new one in the Philippines is an exercise called Katahan. It just completed. It's the first time they've ever done this. Philippines is transitioning from internal focused, as they should have been with all the terrorism that they had to continue to have, but it's gotten much better down in the south in Mindanao. Now they're externally focused because they see the threat that China is producing on the region. So with that, they want to make their organizations better. So they developed this brigade training exercise called Katahan because, as I mentioned previously, that JPMRC rotation is coming up in the Philippines. They knew they needed to get better, especially at the command and control warfighting function from their command post. Almost completely out of the blue to us, but basically a brigade level CPX with some FTX involved in it. And so we help them through that exercise, which is just going to make them better for the JPMRC rotation that's coming up. In Indonesia, what used to be Garuda Shield, which was a bilateral army-to-army exercise, 2 years ago, it turned into Super Garuda Shield, and it's a joint exercise now. I think last count I heard was somewhere around 14 countries take part in Super Garuda Shield now. Because again, they see what is going on in the Pacific, and they want to make sure that they are closer to their partners in the region, and they are better prepared for any contingencies that may happen. So those are just some examples.
That's fantastic news and great work to you and the team. Can you share any upcoming events or engagements that you're preparing for in the near future and what we should be looking out for as we watch the Deter and Assure wheel go forward and how those align with the broader U.S. military objectives in the region?
I think that Joint Pacific Multinational Readiness Center rotation, both the one in the Philippines, just because these things, they're going to continue to grow and they're going to get bigger. The one in Alaska just finished and the Mongolians took part in that. The one in Hawaii is kind of the biggest one. Last year we had Indonesians and Philippines took part in that rotation. This year I'm hearing 4 or 5 countries. It takes place in October timeframe. We're just in the initial planning phases of it. Countries usually come on a little bit later. As far as showing deterrence in the theater, when you get a country like the Philippines to sign up to have one of these rotations, it's big and it's obviously very newsworthy and it'll be in all the social media and local country newspapers in the region. And China takes notice. They take notice. When we're persistently in these countries, they know it. And to use a infantry quote, we hold key terrain. When we are persistently in these countries, we're holding key terrain so our adversary cannot come in and take that key terrain from us.
A lot of people mistake key and decisive terrain as a tactical term. And in the Indo-Pacific, it's really either an operational art term or it's actually a strategic level, specifically in competition when you're trying to keep untowardly things from happening to your friends and your allies and your partners. Based on that discussion, you mentioned the PRC. Have you seen any ways they're trying to learn from the SFAB playbook?
Not specifically. We know that they're aware of the things that we're doing in the region, and we want them to be fully aware of where we are and what we're doing because it's deterrence, right? But specifics, could I point to and say PRC has done or said this because of our activities in the region? No, not specifically.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that changes over time, specifically as we're getting better at being completely engaged and immersed in the theater in ways that we're just getting better at. And better access and more partners and allies working together to thicken that deterrence line. Appreciate your thoughts and answering those questions today, and just in awe of the work that you and your team are doing out there, because it has tactical work and strategic application. So I appreciate that. And we're on your team here. Thanks.
Listeners, you can learn more about the China Land Power Studies Center at ssi.armywarcollege.edu/slsc. For more Army War College podcasts, check out Conversations on Strategy, Decisive Point, and SSI Live.